Welcome to Prophecy Radio, the Percy Jackson podcast that will keep you up to date on all things Rick Riordan and Rick Riordan Presents, including upcoming books, adaptations, and more. This is episode number 104. My name is Karen.
I'm Kristen.
And today we are talking about Chalice of the Gods, chapters 6 through 8. Exciting stuff.
It really is.
It actually is. These are some good chapters. I really liked them. If you would like to give us any feedback about our discussions of Chalice of the Gods, or really anything at all, you can contact us at Prophecy Podcast on Twitter, at Prophecy Radio Podcast on Tumblr, Instagram, and Facebook, and Threads, ooh, I almost forgot it that time, and prophecyradiopodcast@gmail.com. We do have some news to discuss this week. I was a little bad, and I forgot to mention that Dawn of the Jaguar by J.C. Cervantes came out last week. Totally slipped my mind, because I haven't been able to get in further into that series, and it just, like, we don't discuss it on the podcast because of that. So, it slipped my mind. I apologize to Jen, who is a lovely person, but we did celebrate on Twitter and Instagram, and I'm mentioning it now because it is out. It came out on October 10th, and so if you are interested, it kind of sounds like maybe this is the last book for her Rick Riordan Presents, for now at least. I think that this is the final one in this spinoff series, and it kind of sounds like she was saying goodbye to this world, at least for now. So, I guess we'll have to see if she ends up writing anything else. But, you know, she gave us, like, 5 books at this point, I think.
Quite a few.
So, pretty happy about that. If you hop over to Reed Riordan, you can meet Prince Lord, which I think is his name. His name is Prince Lord, which is, you know,
interesting.
He's got a lot to live up to there.
Uh-huh.
You can meet him over on Reed Riordan, and you can also read a chapter excerpt from that book. Fox Snare by Yoon-Ha Lee goes on sale on October 17th. That is coming up very fast. And over on Reed Riordan, you can meet Yang Miho. And there's also a spotlight on Hanul, who we've met in previous books. That's the dragon spirit. We will be talking about Fox Snare on the podcast, so stay tuned for more information about that. We got a blog post from Rick for the first time in quite a while, actually. I didn't actually go back and look to see when the last one was, but I feel like it's had to have been a couple of months, maybe? But we got one on October 9th titled A Chalice of the Gods Wrap-Up Report. This is following the book tour. And there were 2 major things that I wanted to talk about. The rest of it is pretty much, you know, stuff we had already heard about. But he posted some highlights in this blog post, and I thought this was really nice. He writes, "Hard to pick my favorite moments, but some of them were seeing Topher Bradfield again, founder of Between the Pages and organizer of Camp Half-Blood Austin, catching up with Kathy Berner and the whole team at Blue Willow Books in Houston, meeting Stacy Lee and Rosie Brown for the first time in person, and seeing my friend Aryan Simhadri, aka Grover Underwood, and family at the event in Glendale, California. Aryan was there as a fan, by the way, not participating in any SAG strike restricted activities."
If I were a member of the cast and wanted to see Rick, I would absolutely show up at the event.
Like, I mean, and that just further proves that they're fans of the books and everything, too. And, of course, Chalice of the Gods was dedicated to the trio, so that was really awesome.
Yeah.
And I saw some people got some pictures with Aryan and everything, and I thought that was really cute. I love that he was there. And really cool that he met Stacy Lee and Rosie for the first time. That's awesome. And Camp Half-Blood Austin, I've seen them all over TikTok. They do a lot of stuff, so that's really exciting. He also wrote about the WGA strike ending, which happened while he was still on tour. He says, "While I was on tour, we got word that the WGA was lifting its strike restrictions after reaching a tentative deal with the studios. Kudos to WGA and its entire membership for fighting the good fight and getting a better deal for writers. Now, hopefully, SAG-AFTRA will be able to come to a fair deal so the actors can get back to work, too." More on that in a second.
Yep.
This means that I, as a WGA member, can start working once again on various adaptations we have in development, but it may take a while for all the industry wheels to get turning again. Everyone is scrambling to catch up and reactivate projects that have been dormant for the last 5 months. That's a lot of time to lose, yes, but it is what it is. The strikes were necessary, and we will move forward as best we can from here. And a reminder, we are not yet greenlit for any future seasons of PJO, though we are hopeful that if viewers like the first season and it does well, we'll be able to move ahead. How do you help make that happen? Tune in and watch on Disney Plus when the first episodes air December 20th.
I see zero chance that they will not renew it if people watch it in December. Yeah. Like, it's not like, yes, it's an expensive-ish production because there's a lot going into it, but like, this is Disney's bread and butter. Like, they will put the money in as long as people are watching.
And they already have put the money in.
Oh, yeah.
And once the SAG strike breaks, we will talk more about that and more about how we're fairly certain that season two is going to happen.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I also just wanted to mention that Becky retweeted somebody who has the original Camp Half-Blood t-shirt.
I saw that.
And it doesn't even have the normal symbol on it. It basically has, it doesn't have the Pegasus. It has Chiron, I'm assuming, that says Demigod in Training, and it's another orange t-shirt. I just thought that was really cool. This is from at Miss Yingling on Twitter. One of my former students teaches with me. He was so excited to buy Rick Riordan's Chalice of the Gods. I asked if he had a Camp Half-Blood t-shirt, and he does now. Camp Half-Blood sent it to me in 2008, so it was time to share the joy. And this is like, I mean, this looks like an older picture. I'm assuming this is from about 2008. Oh, yeah.
It's on the side.
Yeah. October 17th. So almost, it's almost October 17th. And she's got a handful of books all around her and on her head. And she's in the t-shirt. And it just, that's really cool. I like that old shirt. I wish I had one like that.
Heck yeah. Especially sent to you by Rick himself. Yeah. Like, that's pretty cool.
Yeah. Definitely. The last thing I wanted to mention, which I actually forgot to bring up last time, despite the fact that I pulled the book off of my bookshelf and had it sitting here, was that if you saw our Twitter and Instagram, you know that I got my copy, and I think you got your copy too, of the Chalice of the Gods UK edition.
And with the Waterstones one, right?
Yes. Yeah. And I just wanted to warn people, because I did not realize this, the sprayed edges are not the top and bottom, it's only the side. And I was a little disappointed because I had only ever seen sprayed edges on all three sides before. And even though the sprayed edges are really cool looking, I was a little bummed that it wasn't on the top and bottom too.
Yeah, it depends on the book and the edges and the company that's doing them and everything. Like, most of the time they do something on the top, even if they just, like, solid color the top and then do, like, a design on the side. Usually there's something. I was with you. I'm a little disappointed that they didn't do anything to the top and bottom, but yeah, at least the one set is really pretty.
Yeah. So I just wanted to let people know, in case they were still thinking about ordering one, just giving you a heads up about that. I 100% would have ordered it anyway, but it just would have been nice to have the heads up to begin with. And I haven't even showed you these yet. I don't know if you spotted them.
I did.
Yeah.
They're kind of unmistakable. Like,
yeah.
You can't miss them. They glow from across the room.
They really do. So I got the new covers for the UK editions of Percy Jackson and the Olympians. There are only three out right now: Lightning Thief, Sea of Monsters, and Titan's Curse. These are Khadija Khatib's new covers, and they are, honestly, they're even better in person. I'm kind of obsessed with them. They're so bright and colorful, and there's a shine to them. If you look at the first one, I literally thought something was wrong with it at first, and then I moved it back and forth, and I realized that's the rain coming down during the Minotaur scene.
Yeah.
And the other ones have little things like that, too, where there's, like, a certain shine to them, and they're a little bit more raised.
Yeah.
And so there's actually, like, a lot of detail in the covers. I think they're so beautiful. And if you're ever wondering what Karen's favorite color is, it is that exact shade of neon green on the Lightning Thief.
It is.
That is my favorite color in the entire world. And yeah, I'm so glad I got them, and I can't wait until the fourth and fifth book comes out too.
the Titan's Curse one is probably the one that looks the most like the original cover, just because the main Pegasus kind of on the front, it's still very, like, it's still different.
Yeah.
But it's probably the closest, because the other two are brand new. Like, these are brand new images for covers for these, but
oh my gosh, they're so cool. I really like the Lightning Thief one. I think that one's my favorite so far.
Like,
I can't wait to see what she does with the next two.
For sure. Like, for sure. Yeah, these are really pretty.
Yeah.
I wasn't going to order any more books, Karen.
Well, maybe you don't
way too much on books lately, but oh, they're so pretty and I want them. This would be the story of my life. Things are pretty, and so I want them.
Yeah, I mean, that's basically how it works here in this household as well. Oh, we do actually have one more thing. So, if you saw Stephanie Lurie's tweet, then you know there is an auction currently going on put together for Disney's 100th anniversary. And they basically invited 100 creative visionaries to contribute a special piece inspired by their connection to the company between October 12th and 30th. There are many items being auctioned off to raise funds for Make-A-Wish Foundation, which is really wonderful. And Rick has donated a complete box set of all 5 books in the Percy Jackson and the Olympian series, all signed by the author himself with a poster in support of Make-A-Wish. And I looked it up. I'm going to look it up again right now because last time I looked, they were currently at $135. I'm very curious if that has changed.
I'll bet it's more.
Oh, it's definitely more. The current bid is $648.
Wow.
I was honestly going to place a bid. I'm sorry, but I cannot do that. I will happily donate regardless. I think that this is a really great cause, obviously, but unfortunately I cannot place a minimum bid of $653. This is, I will note, the 10th anniversary edition of the books. These are not the most recent Victor Nye books. It is the ones that John Rocco did for the 10th anniversary.
The ones in the box set that make the skyline on the side. I'm looking at them right now.
Yeah, yeah. And, okay, so that actually clears that up because I was like, I wonder what poster comes with it. There's a poster included in that box set. I also have it because I have the box set. So
that's probably the poster.
Yeah, so it's not anything special or different. This is just the 10th anniversary edition, but they're all signed, and obviously it goes to a great cause. If you cannot afford the minimum current bid of $653, maybe you have a rich uncle or something who can donate for you and possibly win this wonderful item.
I mean, yeah. I'm looking at the top bids on some of these other items.
And get 4 friends, pool your money, and each person gets a signed copy.
There you
go.
If you've got enough, yeah. But that bid is just going to go higher and higher.
Yes, it is. But I'm really glad to see a bunch of people have been contributing. Yeah, I was looking at some of the other ones too, and I was like, these are already, like, this one says $20,000.
Oh,
this one says $53,000.
I was going to say, there's a solid crystal slipper, from the updated live-action Cinderella movie that's going for $53,440 right now.
Yeah.
And that's not even the highest bid on the other thing, but I don't know what that other thing is from. There's like a gold bird.
Yeah, that's $69,000.
Yeah. It's crazy. That's so cool. Like, I'm glad that they're getting bids and that people are willing to spend that kind of money on a good cause like this. But
and these are like legit collector's items.
Oh, absolutely, yeah.
Signed by artists, donated by the artists. So this is like direct from the person. So if you have a very strong interest in these, definitely check them out or send it to somebody who does. I will, of course, put the link in the show notes.
It's always fun just to look at these.
I know. Like, I have to be careful, Elsa, though, because I'm like,
oh, I know. There's an Elsa maquette signed by Jennifer Lee. It's like a mock-up of the character that they use while they're animating, like, as a you know, it's so pretty.
That's
like,
cool.
It's all gray, but it's going for $1,100, so I'd have to really want it, and I can't afford to do that. But it's fun. It's still fun to, like, look at all that.
We'll just buy some other books instead.
Right. I'll just buy the UK ones, because now it feels totally doable to order all 3 of those paperbacks and just make that my splurge.
We now are going to wrap up our news section with Kristen's Corner.
Hey, everyone. Let's start with Survivor because I like starting on a high note.
Yeah.
Okay, so Survivor, yes. Jay Maya is still not a part of the major alliance in Reba, which I don't understand what is wrong with them because I think she even, like, on the show just appears very smart. Like, I don't understand why she's not being included, but that's fine. Whatever.
I wonder if she's, like, a little quiet. We just haven't gotten enough of her to see, like, how she's interacting with people, so maybe she's just a little quiet?
I mean, it kind of seems like that. In this episode, one of the other tribes won a reward that allowed them to come to Reba's camp and steal something. They've done this in the past. Caleb from Lulu ended up coming to the camp, and he kind of brought, I mean, like, it was the first time I had really heard Jay, like, talking out loud with people. Like,
yeah.
She's always around the fire with everybody and, like, whatever, so I don't think she's off on her own or anything. But we haven't really gotten to see a whole lot of her yet, besides in the challenges, and she's always keeping up and doing really well.
Yeah.
So, it's just one of those things, she didn't really, apparently something didn't click with that first group. But, it doesn't matter, and I love this. It has been, I think, 4 or 5 seasons now, at least the last, like, 2 or 3 years, basically since season 40, which was the winner's season. Since that season, they have not done a pre-merge tribe swap.
Oh, okay.
This used to be the structure of the show. You got everybody was divvied into tribes, you played a couple of immunities or whatever, and then halfway in between the starting day and merge day, you would do a random swap where either everybody picked a new buff or 2 or 3 people had to switch tribes. Like, they've done it in a bunch of different ways. But they haven't done this in a couple of seasons. I'm so glad it's back because while it will mess with all kinds of alliances, it also throws people who have been completely left out of things for no good reason, it gives them an opportunity to kind of get active and get back in the game. And so I am honestly stoked because I do think this could be good for Jay Maya. There's really only one scenario in which it's bad, and I'll outline that here in a second. But yeah, so I'm really, really excited to see next week's episode and see how this swap is going to play out. But it was nice seeing her in this episode get a chance to kind of, we saw a little bit of her talking. And if you check Jay Miles' socials, I believe it's on Twitter, was where I saw it. There's a, like, secret clip. It's a clip that didn't make the show.
I actually saw it on Instagram, yeah.
Okay, yeah. It's a clip that didn't make the show just for time, where she got to talk about her beliefs, and it's really, it's a nice little clip. Check it out, because Jay actually was able to post it, so I don't know if it went live and she had been waiting for it. Like, I know this is going live and I'm going to share it. Or if they actually let her share it. I don't know where it debuted.
I think because I asked my boyfriend, I was like, where do they post those? And he said YouTube. So maybe it was on their YouTube channel and she just posted it.
Yeah, she was probably waiting for it. Because I'm sure they probably tell the contestants when something specifically related to them is, like, going to be released.
Right.
So they can promote it. But yeah, it was really, really nice to see that because, again, we haven't gotten a ton from Jay. And it's nice that they have a couple of added clips that you can watch right after the episode. In this episode, Caleb wanted a one-on-one with everybody from Reba, and he gave her a compliment and just basically said that, you know, he complimented her on her vision of the game and, like, how she sees things. He can already see that she's a very smart individual, and he doesn't have any idea who is aligned with who in Reba. He got bare bones, but, like, he doesn't know about the alliances. So I'm kind of hoping that if something were to go on, if something were to happen, that hopefully maybe she and him could hook up and work together. Because I think Caleb's a really smart kid, and I would love to see her get, like, bonded to somebody who's got, like, physical, really strong physical abilities, because that's always a good pair, like, a really brainy contestant versus, you know, paired up, aligned with somebody who's really good in the physical stuff. Not to say that she's not, because she's awesome.
Yeah, I mean, she's definitely killing it. I think the tribe switch up could be really good for her, because if she is aware at this point that she's not really in any alliances, then she probably knows that other people are. And so if they switch, then she can basically start at ground zero and kind of do what she didn't do on Reba. And there might be other personalities in some of the tribes that she connects with a little bit more, and hopefully they'll see her and kind of want to bring her in.
I mean, to be honest, we have no idea who's going to end up on which squad when this swaps next week.
Mm-hmm.
I would kind of love to see her and Emily on the same team.
Really?
Because I just think that Emily is very bookish and, like, very thoughtful about everything. And for some reason, I just wonder if they wouldn't, like, understand each other.
Yeah.
They may not be the best allies or whatever, but I'd love to see them, like, actually get a chance to talk.
Mm-hmm.
Because I feel like they would understand the other's thought process. I don't know. Just something about her. She wasn't my favorite at the start, but
yeah.
she's grown a lot in a very short period of time.
This last episode was very good.
Yes.
It was a very good episode.
Yeah.
I think Jay and Caleb could be really interesting, because I think that he's kind of collecting people who he knows will help him in the end. And, you know, not to get too deep into survivor theories, but, like, him bringing Emily along is really smart of him, because
yep.
at the final three, like, he's going to win that, hands down.
Well, and she was out. She will, if he saves her game, I have a feeling she's going to stay loyal to him.
Yeah, exactly.
It's genius.
Yeah, it's really smart. And so Jay could be another good person to have along. She hasn't, you know, made any bumps or anything like that, but she also hasn't played strongly yet. Now, that could change, obviously, as we go into the season, but I'm hoping that maybe they'll connect or something like that. So,
yeah.
I'm pretty excited. I'm glad she's still along. This episode was very good. If you're not watching, then, you know, give it a try. I was a Survivor hater for a while. Not as much as I disliked Big Brother, which still stresses me out, but it's fine. Survivor is way more up my alley, and I never used to watch any reality TV. But Survivor, I did watch the very first season when it came out, because everybody did,
yeah.
I swear. But
it's fun.
I'm a fan now. Yeah, it is.
I just want to note that the only way that this tribe swap could go badly is if she is the only Reba member amongst, like, a bunch of Bello people, or if the entire Lulu tribe stays together
mm.
and she is, like, the only person added or something like that, then that could be troublesome.
Because they already have alliances.
Even if it was, like, three people from Reba and it was Simu, who's not aligned with anybody, and then, like, one or two of the other people, just the sheer numbers of, like, okay, these three Bello are going to stick together because they know each other. They
right.
don't know me at all.
Yeah.
So, like, and that has happened in past seasons, but, again, she's a really good, she seems to be an asset in challenges. That's always the kind of person you tend to keep around right now.
Yeah.
Once you get to the merge, then you start to kind of focus on physical threats. But now, you kind of want people who can do puzzles, who are,
yeah.
you know, helpful in the water and helpful swimming and all, you know, all that sort
yeah.
of thing.
And I hope that people remember that they won that challenge because she was the one guiding them.
Right?
You know?
They were behind.
Yeah.
She pulled it back together, man.
Yeah.
I was so proud.
Yeah.
But yeah, so I am very excited to see what is going to happen on Survivor next week, because it's going to be a giant shakeup, and that's always fun. Those are always the best. So the other side of Kristen's corner is, of course, the strike update. We have some bad news. The AMPTP has stepped away from the negotiating table. They had been taking, like, negotiation basically day by day, and in between giving each other, like, a day or two to regroup in between each negotiating session.
Right.
A lot of people thought this was a good sign that they were really just getting down to the nitty-gritty.
I really thought it was going to be, like, any day now they
yeah.
will come to a conclusion.
A lot of people did, including me. But that is absolutely not the case. It's funny because the AMPTP basically did the same thing with the WGA, where they, like, they were kind of close on a deal, or, like, there was a deal being made, and then they stepped away and made a huge spectacle of the fact that the WGA is being ridiculous. And, of course, the media covered it and said they're not being ridiculous. Like, they're asking for reasonable things. Mm-hmm. And then they ended up back at the table and made a deal. So that's what has happened here. The AMPTP, as soon as they stepped away from the table, reached out to all the media outlets and said, we're stepping away because they're being ridiculous and asking for way more than they should be. And this, you know, like, we're just not okay with this. Of course, SAG-AFTRA put out a statement talking about exactly what they've asked for, and it seems incredibly reasonable to me, a peon who knows nothing. If you want, we'll put a link in the show notes to the tweet thread, which has all of the, like, specifics, and it's explained pretty thoroughly on there. But I thought it was worth noting that the things that they are not agreeing on include performers being replaced by AI, increasing wages to keep up with inflation, and sharing a tiny portion of the immense revenue that streaming makes. They're not even asking for increases in all of the different ways that these shows are marketed now. They're literally only talking about streaming increases. They asked for, I believe, 2% based on, like, subscriber dues. I believe it's 57 cents per subscriber per year.
Yeah.
Like, it's not much.
I saw that too, and that seems reasonable, yeah. The other thing, going back to the first point with AI, I saw the other day an article that was basically like, oh yeah, by the way, Disney and these other studios have been scanning background actors and using their likenesses in the backgrounds of other things, and they're not getting paid for that. They didn't even know that was happening.
Nope. This is the problem with AI at the moment. It kind of emerged, and all of these companies said, we're using that, and they started using it. We have not had a chance to legislate what this AI can, should, is allowed to be used for, how it's trained. Like, we've talked about this before, but there's a large number of books that were scanned into an AI engine, and no one, like, including a lot of Rick's books.
By the way, including my co-writer's books.
I wonder.
I looked it up. My books specifically aren't on there, but my co-writer, LT Ryan, two of his books were in there.
Yeah, there's, I think, at least, like, 15 or 20 of Rick's books are included in that.
Yeah, I'm not surprised.
Like, it's insane that they did not think there was any chance they would need permission to do that. They just went ahead and did it, and basically are saying, oops, we didn't know, like, I'm sorry. Like, no, that doesn't fly. There's going to be a lot of lawsuits and a lot of copyright issue, you know, legal cases and things coming up in the next few years as we figure out how to legislate AI. But starting bare bones here, they have taken it upon themselves to, hire background actors for a day of work, scan their bodies, their faces into a computer, and then they digitally input them into scenes of movies that these people are not getting paid for because they were paid for their one day of work, which is the scan. It's not okay.
That's not
okay. And that's one of the things that SAG is fighting for, is background actors should be paid every time their likeness is used. I don't care if you scanned them and they worked one day. If you're continuing to use their likeness, they need to be compensated for that. The AI stuff concerns me quite a bit. Like, just because I want creatives to continue to be able to be creatives, and if everything is digitized in the background, that cuts so many people out of work that it's just ridiculous.
Yeah, it's a huge conversation. You know, I was really hoping that we would get some sort of conclusion prior to New York Comic Con so that we could talk about what's going on there, but we're standing strong with SAG, and we will not be talking about the show in detail until the strike is over. So it is what it is at this point, and hopefully there'll be less time between them walking away and coming back to the table, because I really don't think SAG is going to be the one to give in first. I mean, WGA was striking for so long. SAG is willing to go as far. They know it'll work at some point. So
yeah.
hopefully they can just stick with it.
Yeah. SAG knows what the minimum standard is for them. They know what they absolutely cannot live without. And I think we're going to see a settlement eventually, hopefully sooner rather than later. But we'll see how it goes.
And they specifically mentioned they made concessions to their request. Like, they were trying to come to a middle ground, and there were just some things that the others weren't willing to meet them halfway on.
I also am going to have Karen include this in the show notes as well. There are two Deadline articles. The first one is the actual, like, announcement that the studios have declared the talks suspended, and they're slamming the guild for rejecting the terms that were offered to WGA and DGA. Like, we offered this to them. I mean, it wasn't what a WGA agreed to, but it was offered to them at one point. But it's a really good article. It outlines what's going on. It outlines, like, what they're asking for and what the studios are rejecting and all of that. It's pretty good for that. But then there's a second article that came out not long after with SAG-AFTRA's response to the studios reaching out to the media and talking about the bully tactics that they've taken on and how they're not being honest, that they actually cut the proposal from what they originally offered.
I saw that.
Yeah. Like, they originally had offered more. The studios actually cut money from the proposal and gave it back to them. Like, oh, we're going to do less than we originally offered you.
Yeah.
Like, no.
That's not how this works.
This is, no. So, yeah, it's a really good pair of articles to kind of get an idea if you're really interested in this and want to understand
better. Yeah, I haven't read those yet, but I think I'll sit down and look through them because I'm really interested in the specific terms and especially the ways that the AMPTP are being dishonest because, I mean, I'm always going to side with the creatives and stuff like that, but I'm just very curious the way that the media is being used on both sides to show the general public whose opinion can sway these things, especially with the advent of social media and how important it is in our daily lives, just how it's being used to do that. So, yeah,
the biggest question for me is the studios, I don't understand how they think that the general public is going to side with them versus our favorite actors. If there's one group of people that, like, the general public is going to see faces and say, we're with them, it's the actors. Like, I don't understand what they think they're going to gain by doing all of this.
Nobody's going to be on the studio side.
That's what I'm saying. Like, I don't see anybody being like, oh, this is a totally legit argument. I'm moving my side to that. Like, no. So, hopefully, this is just, again, just a tactic. And they'll be back at the table sooner rather than later, and we'll get a deal way before December, hopefully, crossing all the fingers.
Yeah.
Okay, but that's pretty much wraps up the news section. Sorry, we don't have better news on the strike front, but we will persevere.
Yeah. Hopefully, maybe by the time you hear from us next week, something new will have come up. Yeah. Better news than that, at least.
Definitely a possibility. You never know.
Yeah.
But we do have fun things to talk about because we have Chalice of the Gods.
Yes.
And this week we're talking about chapters 6 through 8. And we will be starting with chapter 6, entitled Because Licorice.
Yeah.
So, Grover leads Percibeth to Heebie-Jeebies, a 90s-esque entertainment center destined to keep everyone feeling young and a perfect place for a goddess obsessed with youthful exuberance. We find out that after they leave the smoothie shop, they head to Times Square, which is Percy's favorite place. No sarcasm.
Yeah.
I just loved how he's like, I hate Times Square. Yeah. I hate Times Square.
Everybody who has ever lived in New York City hates Times Square and will go out of their way to avoid it.
I mean, I get it. Yeah. As a tourist, I was like, this is awesome. But, like, I quickly understand why people are kind of avoiding
it. I liked it, like, the first time I went there. And I do like going there because it's just in so many movies. So it's kind of cool to stand there and see all the billboards and stuff like that. But it's not worth it. There are so many people, and all the people in costume, they freak me out. I don't know, I just don't like it.
Yeah, it's fun to, like, stand in certain places and be like, this is where they did this. Yeah, like, this is where
Spider-Man.
This is where Rachel Berry stood on Glee.
Yeah.
I know.
This is where Captain America realized that.
Right?
This is where he stood and looked around and saw the new,
It's not the 1940s. This is a whole new century.
Yeah, century.
That's the word I was looking for. But no, I loved that. It was a nice little fun tidbit. Mm-hmm. And we got a reference to Percy hanging from the billboard.
This made me so happy. By his pants.
Yes.
Because, you know, we read that story, like, I mean, it was a little while ago at this point, but it's so vivid in my mind still, and I just love that, like, Rick included something that was outside of the main five books, that it was, like, a side story. But, like, it was still just the perfect little reference that if you got it, it really impacted you. And if you didn't, you're like, wait a second, I wonder where that's from. And
then right? You like, that's gotta be from a short story. That's gotta be from a missing chapter or something. Yeah. So, but it's all out there because Rick has been really good about making sure he shares all those extra little goodies and the extra stories are published somewhere, and a lot of them are available at your local library. So if you don't understand the billboard thing, look into some of the extra works of Rick Riordan.
Yes.
And you will find it, I promise. I don't remember exactly which short story it was, but
I think it was was it Apollo?
That's what I thought too. I thought it was one of the ones involving Apollo.
Yeah, the singer of Apollo. I'm pretty sure that's what it was because he like goes up on the roof.
Yeah.
I think that's what
that
it was.
That sounds right.
Yeah.
So if you don't understand the billboard reference, check that out. But okay, so they arrive at Heebie-Jeebies, which, A, thank you for giving me a firm ground to pronounce Hebe and know that it's Hebe.
Because
Heebie-Jeebies. So I'm like, it's got to be Hebe. Yeah. Love that. It's fabulous. And Grover knows the shop because it has the best licorice ropes, and that is apparently catnip for goat gag.
Percy know this already?
No.
This had never been mentioned before?
I do not remember this.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, like, there's a lot of things that we know Grover's fond of. Tin cans, enchiladas. Yeah. We know these things.
Paper plates.
But I don't think we've ever talked about licorice and it being catnip.
Yeah.
So that is hilarious. But yeah, I this chapter especially, Percy was very, like, on it. Like, his one-liners were just, like, constant.
Yeah.
I think I had, like, five different favorite lines
in this chapter. Yeah, and the sarcasm throughout these three chapters especially, he is holding back 80% of what's in his head, and he's still getting in trouble for everything he's saying.
Right? It's fantastic.
Yeah.
I love it so much. But Heebie-Jeebies is basically, like, Chuck E. Cheese's on acid. Percy's looking around, and he sees Skee-Ball and Dance Dance Revolution games, and, like, a myriad of every arcade game you could ever think of. There's a fill-your-own-candy-bag dispensing station, robotic iguanas playing instruments, which is what reminded me of Chuck E. Cheese,
because
he used to have the mouse band.
Not Five Nights at Freddy's?
No. We are not. I am not seeing that movie. When I say we, it was the royal we. We are not seeing that movie. I've seen the trailer. No, thank you. Giant no. But yes, I mean, it does kind of remind you of that. Just less scary. It's basically a huge warehouse. Grover notes that he's never seen the other end of it.
Yeah.
He's gone into it, he's played games, he's gotten his licorice, but he's never been all the way through it. Percy is the first to note the low-rent Lotus Casino vibes.
First of all, I love that he instantly recognized the Lotus Casino vibes, because that was the first thing we said when we read that article about Hebe, and we were like, this sounds like the Lotus Casino.
Mm-hmm.
But also, him saying out loud, low-rent Lotus Casino, I was like, keep your voice down, sir. You're gonna get in trouble.
Right? Like, these are things we say in our heads.
Yeah.
These are not the thoughts we allow escape. Yeah, Grover says that while it gives off those vibes, families seem to come and go as they please. It doesn't seem to be the kind of place where you get trapped or they try and keep you there or anything like that. As they're standing there, they're watching people enter and leave and enter and leave. So it doesn't seem to be that kind of place.
And Grover's never had trouble leaving.
Right.
Yeah.
It just is basically Annabeth calls it a nostalgia trap. Because it's so much fun and you love being there and it makes you feel that youthful exuberance because it's Hebe's place that you want to stay. Like, I mean, it's not keeping you there. You just are sucked into all the nostalgia.
It's kind of like playing a phone game and whiling away the hours, knowing that you could put it down at any minute and walk away, but you just want to keep playing.
Especially because you only have 9 hours left on the stupid timed trial thing.
That was literally me last night.
I look at it and I go, I have 23 hours. If I play like 13 more rounds right now, maybe I'll get high far enough ahead that if I forget to play tomorrow, I'm not going to forget to play. Yeah. I play those stupid games so much. So yes, I think it's very similar.
Yes.
Also worth noting, it, like, this place has everything, but I think it also has a bit of this magic where if there's something specific that you need to trigger net nostalgia, I think it kind of pops up
for me. I totally agree.
Because Annabeth notes a favorite old arcade game called Stackers, which Percy kind of describes as being like a building game where you like stack blocks. So I'm guessing it's very close to like a Tetris-esque kind
probably,
of game.
Yeah.
And she mentions seeing that and kind of has a moment. And at that same moment, Percy is looking over at the candy counter and he's seeing all of his old blue candy favorites, which triggers good memories with his mom working at a candy counter, back at a job that didn't pay her worth a damn and was really hard, but it was fun and he loved having a mom that dished out candy. Like, that's awesome. And even Grover talks about the licorice and how it's, like, addictive and how, you know, it attracts him to the place. Like, so, yeah, there's definitely some magic going on.
Definitely, because when we get to the pizza later on, that pizza is the very specific kind of pizza that Percy used to eat in, like, third grade. Mm-hmm. So, there's definitely some...
Yeah, like, it's not just
divine
general
magic.
Nostalgia. It's very specific targeted nostalgia points that when you walk in there, you start finding things.
It's like targeted ads, but for nostalgia.
It is. It is. It totally... They find you. So as they're wandering around a little bit, kind of getting the lay of the land, they run into a manager named Sparky. And Sparky looks to be about 9 years old. They ask Sparky where they can find Hebe, and Sparky tells them that they can find her in the karaoke bar, which is past the diving pool and left at the hen house. Not exactly what you expect to be at an entertainment center, but sure, why not?
Yeah. Which I just want to say, because Percy mentions, like, oh, it's an actual hen house. I thought it was going to be something for, like, a hen party. Do kids not in the UK know what that is? Like, that's not a common phrase. Because, like, a hen party is, like, a British thing.
In Australia, a hen party is, like, a bachelorette party, isn't
it?
Yeah,
but, like, we don't say that in the United States.
That's true.
So I just found it very interesting that, like, Percy would know that and that it's in the book. I mean, it was a great joke, but I was like, would kids actually get that joke? Would they know what a hen party is?
I don't know. That is an interesting
Because that's not
point.
Something I knew until, like, late into my 20s when I started watching, like, British shows and stuff.
I don't know.
Yeah.
That is a good note, because honestly, I don't know. A lot of kids, that might go over their head.
Yeah.
But again, they still kind of understand what's going on, at least.
Yeah,
so it's,
like,
yeah.
In context.
But that's worth noting. Also, I loved Percy's notes on the diving pool. Like, any non-circulatory body of water that children are jumping in, I am not entering.
Yeah.
And I love how he also makes note of the water, like, in case I need that later.
Yeah.
Like, there's some, again, Percy is... He's in rare form in these three chapters.
He really is.
But here, it was nice kind of getting to see, like, him noticing the water, but then saying, only in case of necessity, because that's gross.
Also, I just want to pause here for a second.
Sure.
Because Half-Blood Trio on Twitter, we recently put up our Rick Riordan interview from last week, if you guys listened to that. And if you didn't, go listen to it, please. And Half-Blood Trio on Twitter quoted a bunch of, like, took screenshots of the article and quoted a bunch of things and was just really excited about the article, which made me really excited about it. I was glad that they reacted to it that way. And I saw some of their older tweets about stuff, like, about reading Chalice of the Gods, and they said that it feels like Rick found his excitement again for Percy Jackson, that this is, like, original Percy Jackson vibes. And a huge part of it, I believe, and they believed, came from the fact that Mark's writing style had such an influence on Rick, and the way that Rick took his time to have his characters reflect a bit more, and you see a lot more of their emotions in his writing right now. And I think that's kind of what we're picking up on here. There's a lot of, like, reflection. Some of it's funny, some of it's wistful and nostalgic, but I completely agree that this is like, this is Percy Jackson in a nutshell. And I would even hand this book to somebody and be like, if you like this book, then you should read all of them. Like, The Lightning Thief is great, and obviously it's where you would want them to start. But this is like a low stakes, like if you don't really want to get into the first series, like read the first book and then go, oh, I don't know if I want to keep reading it. This is kind of enough of a standalone, even though it's part of a trilogy. It's enough of a standalone that I think that you could get the vibe without feeling like you're pressured into reading more.
I 100% agree basically on all of the above. But yeah, this, in the interview, Rick talks about how he's more of like a plot-driven writer, like, and you can see that laid out plainly in the first two series. The plot is very important, and getting all the pieces together is super important, and the character moments are sprinkled in, and they are also important, but, like, the plot drives those books. Whereas here, it feels like we are just following along slice of life-esque with these three as they go. And I love seeing this at this point from Rick. Like, I love the series we have, but I'm so excited to really have Percy giving us his snappy, like, quips, even if they're in his head because he can't say them out loud. Like, I love that we're getting all of this talk from Percy. It's not just, here's where we're going, here's what we need, we talked to Hebe, she told us this, we had to chase, you know, we were chased by this thing and now we're out of here. And like, it's, we're really getting into everybody's head. And I really love that.
Yeah, so do I.
Okay, so back to the chapter. They go past they take a left at the hen house and they find Hebe in the karaoke bar where there's a bunch of boomers on stage performing old songs. And it's apparently doesn't sound great because they all want to leave, but they need to talk to Hebe. So they find her, and Hebe's flawless looks give her away as an immortal, like, on first glance. Apparently, the gods always give themselves perfect complexions and the close-up ready style at all times, and it just gives it a dead giveaway. These are not mortals. Hebe is wearing a mini dress and go-go boots, which Percy remarks is probably to appeal to the boomers out on stage belting out a tune.
Yeah.
Makes sense. She invites them to sit and then orders pizza so all of them can talk. And that is where this chapter ends. It's a nice little introduction to heebie-jeebies in general, but we also get a chance to see Hebe before we start the big discussion in the next chapter. Mm-hmm. So we have to do our favorite lines and our favorite moments, though. Karen, what was your favorite line?
Mine was Percy thinking about Grover, saying, Grover's expression was a combination of anxiety and hunger, which, come to think of it, was his usual expression. And I just really related to that. I might, you know, I want to be an Annabeth. I might be a Grover, to be perfectly honest.
Everyone wants to be Annabeth.
Yeah.
But hungry and anxious.
That describes me to a T.
It's, you know, most days, it's probably not that far off.
Yeah.
Okay, I have two, but I probably could have picked more than two, but I'm going to read both.
It was really hard to pick lines this time.
It was.
Around.
It really was. My first one is from Percy. He says, he's talking about Grover's love of licorice and all of that, and he says, I don't have a satyr's nose for licorice. It's kind of like catnip for goat guys. It just, the way he calls him goat guy, like, it's just goofball. But I also love this other one where Percy says, I am a guy of limited talents. If I can't kill it with water, a sword, or sarcasm, I'm basically defenseless.
I'm so glad you picked this line. I really wanted to, but I just related to the other one so much, and this, honestly, Styles vibes.
Mm-hmm.
That is the first thing I thought of.
Yep. It feels,
Oh, it was so good.
Percy and Styles have a lot in common.
They
always have.
Yeah.
But this really does kind of take you back and reminds you of that, yeah. Okay, and then our favorite moments. Karen, what was yours?
Mine was Percy remembering his mom working at Sweet on America and feeling like she was, and still is, a superhero. Because this is, you know, I have the privilege of having already read the book, so there's more stuff, you know, not giving anything away, there's more stuff about him reflecting about his mom, And this is just really the beginning of it. And these moments really impacted me so hard, and especially starting here with something that we already know, we're so intimately familiar with, when she worked at the candy shop and all the blue candy and the ways that they survived living with Gabe and being on the run all the time and that sort of thing. It could have been a bad memory for Percy, but his mom found a way to turn it into a good memory. And I love that for him, and I love how much he loves his mom, and we're always talking about how great Sally is, and it's just, it was just really nice to see him reflecting back on that now that he's a little bit older and recognizing, you know, what was really going on and how much that still means to him.
Yeah, absolutely. No, I agree. That was one of my favorite moments, too. But another of mine was Annabeth trying to get Percy to sing Shallow with her. That whole interchange, so funny.
And
Percy's like, you don't want this. And she's like, oh, come on. Like, yeah. She's trying to, like, actually convince him. And
Also, I love that. Rick always puts great musical references into his books. Usually the songs are, like, a little bit older and, like, not as easy to, like, pin down. I feel like Shallow is, like, a very specific song to put in there, which I did not enjoy that movie. I didn't say that I didn't like it or that it was a bad movie. I did not enjoy that movie.
Which is fair.
But I love that song.
Yeah.
And I would love to see Annabeth and Percy sing it.
Plus, I'm sorry, but Shallow.
Yeah.
Percy, water. It works. On all the ways it works.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, it's a great song. And it made me giggle a lot.
It was great. Yeah.
And now I'm going to turn it over to Karen for chapter 7.
Yeah, chapter 7, one of my favorite chapter titles. Big shocker, I offend a goddess.
This could be the title of a lot of chapters.
Yes, it could be the title of his memoir.
For sure.
It really could, though.
It really could.
Percy, Annabeth, and Grover sit down for pizza with Hebe and totally don't accuse her of stealing the chalice of the gods.
Nope, not at all.
Not at all. So yeah, they're sitting down with Hebe, she orders the pizza, and when it appears in front of him, he sees, I mean, it is literally his third grade pizza, and he remembers everything that goes along with it. He describes it as a triangle of melted vinyl, garnished with 3 sad flecks of basil, and served on a paper plate limp with grease. Why does that sound so good?
Now, in my grade school, they were rectangle pizzas.
Okay.
But the cheese would come off as one big piece.
Yeah.
Like, it felt like vinyl. Like,
I can see this pizza.
Like, ours wasn't a triangle, like, slice, but I can see pizza that looks just like this.
Ours were square, and they were so limp and soggy, but I loved them.
Yep.
It was such good pizza. It probably wasn't. It was probably terrible, but, like,
like, if I ate it now, I'd probably be like, oh my gosh.
Yeah.
But especially, like, those little Red Baron round pizzas, too.
Yeah.
Like, they are not good. But I loved them in grade school. I've had them since. They're terrible. But you can't, like, there is no beating them when it's pizza day at school and that's what you're getting.
It's like being in college, and I used to eat the little the Kraft mac and cheese bowls all the time. They're not great, but they were, like, my salvation in college.
You do the things you need to do.
Grover is devouring everything in sight, short of Percy's fingers. I think he eats his napkin and, like, the paper plate and stuff like that. Annabeth, because she's Annabeth, is focused on the boomers singing karaoke. And you can kind of see the gears turning in her head. She's noting everything around her, and she's kind of putting things together. This is a general statement for this chapter, I think maybe even the next chapter and the book as a whole. I love how anti-boomer Percy is. Every chance he gets to take a crack at boomers, he takes it. And I just want to say, Rick, I appreciate you.
Yep. It's so true.
I love it.
It fought for one of my favorite lines in this chapter because it's such a good moment and it's such a good line. Him talking about the boomers, like, taking advantage of, you know, giving them even more time and all this stuff. It's so good. Mm-hmm. So good.
So Hebe knows exactly who Percy Jackson is and makes a snide remark about Percy turning down immortality. And he has a snide remark right in the chamber to throw back at her. But thanks to Annabeth, she narrowly stops him from once again whipping out the sarcasm, which I thought was really great. And they're kind of chatting, talking, and still watching the boomers. And they notice that the boomers are getting younger the more they sing. Hebe thinks that that's why the trio's there, that they want to shave off a couple of years, because why else would they be talking to her? But Percy tells her in no uncertain terms that's not why they're there. And Annabeth, again, still kind of looking around and taking in everything, notices that there are no infants in the arcade, and Hebe at this point admits that she has to be the youngest person in the room, which is just a very interesting thing to know.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, one of those weird quirks that gods have that they just...
I don't quite understand why Hebe would think they're there to shave time off their lives when she knows that demigods are hunted, like, stronger the younger they are.
Like, I mean, it's like, not once like you gods 12, are great at
true. I mean, they're completely self-involved and do not seem to care or understand most of humanity. So that is very true. But, like, yeah, for demigods, it's like once you can get to, like, 18, things taper off and you get to actually live a life. Mm-hmm. So, like, it's the last thing a demigod would want is to go back to being closer to 12 and 13.
Yeah.
They want to age past 18 as fast as possible. And so I just thought it was really interesting, like, Percy is able to just be like, no, and Hebe looks at him like, excuse me?
Yeah. Like, because that's why everybody else is there. And like you said, gods are very self-involved. She probably, as the goddess of youth, thinks that being younger is an asset, but because we know better, but also because we're privy to Percy's thoughts, we know how much he's thinking about the fact that he can't wait to get older, that, you know, he wants to grow up and move on and do these all these other things, mostly so he can stop getting chased by monsters.
Yeah.
He kind of just accepts it as part of life, which that comment will come back to bite him in the butt in a few seconds. But Grover tries to save the day, and he very hypothetically wants to talk to Hebe about, I don't know, Ganymede, for example.
Yeah.
Just a random god that he would like to discuss with her. And Hebe, to her credit, almost instantly puts together,
sharp as a whip,
everything that's going on, and realizes that Ganymede lost the Chalice of the Gods. And because she's noticed the way that he's been acting, and just by way of them showing up, realizes it. And she is so happy. She is so happy because it's no less than he deserves, that upstart, according to her. And then she gets mad because she thinks that they're accusing her of stealing it.
Which is arguably what they're there to do, but they weren't going to say that.
Yeah, yeah. And by the way, Ganymede's warnings of don't mention that the cup's stolen, all this other stuff, don't offend anybody, you know, they are doing a bang-up job at that. It's not great.
I mean, they didn't mention that it was gone. She's just a smart cookie, and she put it all together without them even really having to say anything.
Yeah. But to her credit, again, Hebe says, why would she want to be the cupbearer again when she has her very own establishment? She is in her element at Heebie-Jeebies. Why would she want to be at the mercy of the gods like she was when she was the cupbearer? So, I mean, I think that's a pretty good reason to kind of tentatively cross her off the list of suspects.
Mm-hmm.
And then Hebe says, what did you say earlier, Percy Jackson? Getting older is part of life? Well, perhaps you should start that process over again. Maybe you'll do it right this time and learn some manners. And then she bursts into a storm of rainbow glitter that knocks him out of his chair.
Dun, dun, dun.
Yeah. I love that it was rainbow glitter.
Right?
That just made me happy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
So pretty solid chapter. You know, a lot of, like, back and forth, a lot of, like, talking. Again, not, like, super action-oriented. Like, they're just sitting at a table discussing things, but we make a lot of progress in this chapter.
Absolutely.
What was your favorite line?
It was kind of a throwaway line, but it made me giggle. It was Percy in one of the instances in which he's about to say something he shouldn't. He says, "I must have looked like I was about to bust out the sarcasm because Annabeth intervened."
That was a close one for me, too.
It's just, it's a throwaway line. Like, it's not super witty or whatever, but yeah, it's just perfect because, yeah, Annabeth took one look at him and was like, "You can't say that."
Yeah. She knows what's about to happen.
Exactly.
My favorite line was when Percy is watching the Boomers and he says, "The Boomers finished their song. After a few high fives, they replaced their mics and shuffled off stage, heading back to the arcade. Typical Boomer timing. Have a blast, then leave right before everything goes sideways." Ouch, Percy.
Burn.
Read them for filth. What was your favorite moment?
Him remembering his old elementary cafeteria pizza eating days, because it took me back.
Yeah.
We didn't have a cafeteria. We ate in our classrooms, like, at our desks.
Really?
We walked down to the, because we had, like, the school kitchen, but the kitchen was in the gym. We didn't have a cafeteria.
What?
Yeah. Like, the kitchen was right next to the gym. I went to a small, like, parochial school, which had about maybe 400 students total in the whole school. But, like, we would walk down, if you were getting hot lunch, you would walk down in a line to the kitchen. There was, like, a window, a giant window that opened, and you walked down the line and got your lunch. And then if you bought, like, milk or ice cream or any of the extra special stuff, you could get that while you were there. And then you would walk your tray back down the hall to your classroom, sit down at your desk, and eat lunch.
Huh.
It was just one of, and if you ate cold lunch, like if you packed your own, you would just stay at your desk and start eating while everybody else was getting their hot lunch.
Yeah.
But I specifically, like, it took me back to elementary school and, like, walking down on pizza day with most of my class because everybody eats a hot lunch on pizza day. And, yeah, not losing my hot lunch ticket and, like, making sure that they could punch it. And, like, it took me back, man.
Back in third grade, I think that was when we had a huge cafeteria because I went to not a large school, but, like, much larger than your standards.
Yes.
And they had the, like, picnic tables in the cafeteria.
Sure.
With, like, the wire that was, like, the plastic, like, it had a covering over it.
Okay.
It's hard to describe. And they were different colors, and I think it was, like, green and blue, or blue and red or something, and, like, you always wanted to sit at, like, a certain color table, and when you couldn't, it was very upsetting.
Mm-hmm.
And that was also when I ate a watermelon and swallowed the seeds and was scared that a watermelon was going to grow in my tummy, because you're in third grade and you don't know any better.
These are things I believed. Way longer than I probably should have believed.
Yes. Absolutely agree. My favorite moment was Annabeth doing her best to combat Percy's instinctual sarcasm, because it's so Percibeth, and I love both of them so much, and they're such a great team, because Annabeth kind of holds him back when he needs to be held back. Not that it made much of a difference.
I was going to say, if Annabeth wasn't there to rein Percy in, Percy would have died a while ago.
Yeah.
She does a good job of, like, kind of heading off the worst moments. Like, maybe that's gonna tip the scale, Percy. Like, let's not insult the goddess. Like, you've already insulted her enough. Let's not cross the line. So we gotta love Annabeth for that.
Yeah.
Okay, so this takes us to chapter 8, entitled "I Want My Mommy," which Percy says a couple of times in this chapter, and every time it makes me just, like, yeah, we want Sally. I love Sally Jackson. Okay, so that blast that Percy felt, that was Hebe younging them. We'll define that in a second. Oh, and complaining about Hebe's blessings, that gets you chased by a ton of vicious-looking hens. Fabulous. All right. Let's dive into this chapter. That blast that Percy felt was Hebe basically drop-kicking him through his youth back to a certain time. Hebe younged us is the quote. Like, that is what was written.
The number of times that Rick used that as, like, a verb, like, she younged us, was just, it was so funny.
Yeah, so she physically transformed them back into their 8-year-old selves, mm-hmm. and also, like, mentally.
I was just gonna say that, yeah.
Yeah, like, their entire, like, personalities have been kind of regressive back to 8 years old. So rather than maybe some of the more adult terms that they would call each other, they're using other words, like dummy and things like that, yeah. that you don't hear once you're 15.
Yeah.
Percy suggests maybe leaving the building will kind of nullify the magic, and so they maybe should try that, and maybe it'll get them back to their appropriate ages. As they are passing the hen house toward the exit, Grover suddenly headbutts Percy in the chest. He has this unquenchable need to play.
Yeah.
And I just... It... Like,
so funny.
Like, the idea of Grover with, like, these teeny little antler buds coming out of his head and, like, his hooves are really big and extra gangly. Like, he already had issues when he was a teen, but, like, just kind of the idea of all of that is so cute.
I need some... Some people already have, not for this book, but for other things, but I need somebody to draw the three of them, especially, like, Leah, Arian, and Walker
yeah.
as, like, young versions of themselves. Oh my gosh, I just imagine their heads being a little too big for their bodies, and like Grover's crying, and Annabeth has her fists on her hips, and Percy is like, I don't know what to do, he's panicking. Oh my gosh, it would be so cute.
So cute.
Yeah.
I just love the extra little moment. It's very telling, and it gives us a little bit of a glimpse into Seder, like, aging.
Yeah.
Like, that is, like, he does have instincts. They're kind of animalistic instincts, but, like, he does have those that he dealt with when he was 8 years old. And I thought that was a cute little aside. Okay, so they try to walk out the door. It doesn't work. They're able to walk out the door, but they're still 8 years old.
Yeah.
And it doesn't change anything. They then go back in, because obviously they need to figure out how to fix this, and they see Sparky, so they talk to her, and they find out that Sparky is actually 65, and only appears 9, because Hebe has blessed her after months of working there.
Yeah.
So, as they're standing there talking to Sparky, they're complaining, would be the word, about this blessing, and how they didn't ask for it, and how they really, really need to get back to their older selves, and Sparky announces, are you filing an age-based complaint? And she goes, unleash the predators, let the chase begin. And we have no idea what's happening. Like, you can see all three of them in their little 8-year-old bodies going, what now?
Yeah.
Unleash the who?
Yeah.
Yeah. So if they survive the race, which we still don't know what it is, the three of them may get a chance to talk to Hebe again, but they have to survive. And what race is this, do you ask? Well, it's the chickens from the hen house who are currently racing toward them. And there's a quote that I don't think either of us chose that I had to include.
Yeah.
Because I'm pretty sure it's Percy says, normally I wouldn't use the word rampage to describe poultry behavior, but these birds were pure feathered chaos.
There were so many good lines
so
in this
many.
Chapter.
This
oh
was
God.
The chapter
yeah.
where it was just packed full
yeah.
of gems.
It was so hard to choose.
So many.
Oh my gosh.
That one almost stole it.
And as somebody who is terrified of birds, which includes chickens, as delicious as they are, I don't want some chickens to be rampaging toward me.
No.
That is one of my worst fears. If you've seen The Good Dinosaur, if you remember Arlo being afraid of the chicken, that's me.
Ding, ding, ding.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I agree. The crowd is absolutely delighted by this and kind of starts running along with the chickens, kind of like the bulls in Pamplona. They're just having a ball. And the chickens are knocking over furniture, stealing food out of people's hands, messing up their hairdos. Like, these chickens are not, like, killing people, but they're not causing chaos either.
Yeah.
So it's very interesting. Percy, as he's watching the chickens come towards them, grabs Riptide out of his pocket in pen form and uncaps Riptide and is still a pen.
Nothing happens.
Nothing happens. And you can see Percy standing there with the pen like, what?
And there's a bit of an exchange between him and Grover. And Grover's saying, like, maybe it won't work because you're young. And Percy says, you mean my sword has a childproof cap?
Oh, my God.
I'm telling you, one-liner after one-liner.
So it's funny. This is
so good.
This is maybe the most quotable chapter that we've read in a long time. This one was so good.
I second it, because yeah. It was, again, just one-liner after one-liner. My last note for this chapter is, they run.
Yeah.
Annabeth, I think, is the one who's like, guys, we should probably run. But yeah, so that is where we leave our trio.
Were you mad at me that we had to stop after this chapter?
I mean, a teensy bit, but these three chapters go together so well.
Yeah.
It's them getting to Hebe, them talking to Hebe, them leaving Hebe, and then figuring out, okay, now we're 8 years old. What are we doing? So they kind of, I can kind of see why we did all three of these together. But it's a little crazy. I'd like to know what the next one is. And after this episode, I can go read it.
Yes, you can.
Okay, so we still have to do our favorite lines and favorite moments. And I, again, picked two because there's just too much.
Yeah.
But I'm going to let Karen go first. So what was your favorite line?
Again, really hard to choose, but it was when Percy was like, I was trying to be the reasonable one. Definitely a sign of the apocalypse.
I mean, it's true.
Again,
picked two. My first one is, his goatee was now a gone tee. So lame, but I love it.
Such a dad joke.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I love it.
It was perfect. And then also, oh no, I don't want to be a kid again. Like, it just, so good.
Grover said that, right?
Yeah.
Because Percy was like, he could have meant it as like a young, like human child or a young goat, which is also a kid.
The pun is what works in that. Yeah. That was, I'm so glad that Rick did not let that moment pass them by.
Yeah.
Like, the ability to make a kid joke, top notch. Okay, and then what was your favorite moment?
Honestly, the best moment in the entire chapter. Grover headbutting Percy to practice social dominance in the herd. It was so cute. It was so funny. I just, like, oh my God. And he couldn't help it, and he immediately apologizes. He's like, I'm so sorry. I just have to practice social dominance in the herd.
Well, and I think he runs into something else. Like, as they're dealing with something else later, Grover's in a corner headbutting something else, and Percy's like, that's a thing. Like, that's definitely a satyr thing. Fun.
Yeah.
Fun. Okay, mine, honestly, it was the one-liners from Percy, but also being able to see them all regress to kids. Annabeth calling Percy a dummy, Grover calling Annabeth a meanie. Like, I can just picture the three, you know, our trio, talking to each other like they're 8 years old.
Yeah.
We've only ever seen them at about 12 and higher with, you know, the original series. But, like, we know, you know, Annabeth, we know about what happened to her when she was 7. We know about that. So, like, to see them regress, it's...
And they're, like, trying to fight it, but they just can't. Like, it's just so innate for them.
Well, and, like, the innate whininess and, like, inability to deal that you have when you're 8 years old because everything is overwhelming and you don't want to handle it, and your mom is the one who solves those problems for you, or your parent or whomever,
and
they just, they don't, their initial response to stimuli is, I want my mom, I don't want to deal with this, and then it's like their brain clicks into their older selves and it's like, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to say that, I know we have to figure this out. Like, I love that they're able to react as if they're 8 and then kind of move to their present mind.
And that's something that Percy mentions too. His ADHD is a lot harder to deal with. His mind skips around a lot more. Like, it really is not only a physical change, but a mental one too.
Yeah. Prophecy Radio is produced by Subjectify Media. Follow our website on Twitter, Facebook, Tumblr, Threads, and Instagram at Subjectify Media, or visit us at SubjectifyMedia.com. We are home to 3 other podcasts as well. Tune into Rewatchable for in-depth discussions of your favorite canceled and cult classic TV shows, such as Firefly, Veronica Mars, Avatar The Last Airbender, Buffy, Angel, and more. Not About the Weather is a general interest show that sometimes features interviews with our favorite creators. And Not Another Teen Wolf podcast features interviews with the cast and creators and has discussed every episode of the show, as well as the movie, and Jeff Davis's new show Wolfpack is currently getting the same treatment. You can contact Prophecy Radio directly on Twitter at Prophecy Podcast
or on Instagram, Facebook, Tumblr, and Threads at Prophecy Radio Podcast. You can also email us your long-form thoughts to prophecyradiopodcast@gmail.com. You can find us on Apple, Spotify, or any of your favorite podcast platforms. Please consider leaving us a review or a rating. 5-star reviews help others to find us, and that is always very helpful. You can leave us questions, comments, ideas for content you might want to hear from us in any of these places. We love hearing from you guys. We do have a bit of feedback, so I'm going to throw it to Karen for, I think this was on Instagram, right?
No, this was actually on Twitter. And it's funny because the Dan meme page on Twitter, who you can also find on Instagram, the spooky meme page for the month of October, says, that. Anyways, I don't Twitter super often anymore, but I gotta call out Prophecy Podcast's interview with Rick Riordan, where the first thing they brought up was the Riordan verse podcasters. And I definitely had to respond to this and basically just said, you know, not to be sappy, but the Riordan verse podcasters have been extremely welcoming to us when we first came on the scene. They continue to be a really supportive community, not only to each other and to us specifically, but to all of the other fans in the fandom, and they work really hard to bring an array of content. You know, we're all basically talking about the same thing, but we've all got our special interests and different ways that we approach at all of this. So I'm just really grateful for them. And as you heard, Rick definitely knows about all the podcasters, and I was really glad that, you know, he's aware.
Yeah, it's just nice to know that, like, all of these podcasts, like, it does require quite a bit of work with the preparation and the recording and the editing and everything. Like, getting a podcast episode together is no slouch. And, you know, we're all doing it because we're huge fans and we love it and we want to talk about it and we want to run these things. But it's just nice when the creator, when the person that you're doing it all for, kind of, at least just acknowledge, like, oh, yeah. We know about you guys.
Yeah.
Like, you know, it's just one of those things. It's like, okay, they do know. Yeah. Like, they are aware, and that's really cool. Like, it just makes you feel good inside.
Yeah, definitely.
Love that. And I also wanted to do a quick mention. Someone on our Instagram was a little concerned with spoilers in some of our quote graphics. We are taking that under advisement. The one that was posted wasn't super spoilery or anything, but since some of our quotes in the future can be, we're going to try a new method and maybe blur out the actual quote graphic and put it as a second image in that same collection.
Yeah.
So hopefully that will hide any spoilers that may come up. But it didn't really occur to me to worry about it because the book's been out for a couple weeks and I didn't really think it would be deemed spoilery. But we do want to help you guys avoid those too. So
that specific quote that we put up really wasn't spoilery. But as we move through the book, there's definitely going to be some that...
Yeah. And I understand if you can't read a book right away and you kind of want to avoid them. I don't want you to have to, like, block us or anything crazy like that. So we are going forward, we're going to try and put a little bit of a filter, basically, over top of it. So you can see the quote graphics. They just won't pop up right away.
Right.
So just a heads up, if you're a fan of our Instagram or you're on there quite a bit, the quote graphics will still be there. They'll just be behind kind of like a spoiler wall.
Yeah.
But that is the end of this episode. Next week, we are going to be talking Fox Snare by Yoon-Ha Lee. So we will take a break from Chalice of the Gods.
Yes.
So you can read the next chapter, but we won't be talking about it for 2 weeks. It's okay. We'll make it one way or another. I'm really excited about this book, though,
because
we have loved the other Thousand Worlds books.
Yeah.
And this will be a lot of fun, I'm sure. So until then, this is Kristen.
And I'm Karen.
And we're Prophecy Radio signing off. Over and out.